Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We stream live at richarddugan.com, newspress.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. And we encourage you to check out all of our guests. We're linked to them. And so we hope that you will avail yourself of all of the good information that we have available to you. We've been given that information from our guests, and we're going to talk today about a very interesting subject. I think this is rather interesting, especially in our technological age, and I say that in the context of the information that's used. This is a book entitled The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. And I'm thinking of an analogy of the difference between a small little dinghy and a giant super tanker. And depending upon, I guess, your life and how you perceive it is going to determine how quickly you're going to be able to do that. Although there is another option. If you use the technological equivalency, as we're always told, when a computer isn't working, if your phone isn't functioning the way you want it to, reboot it. The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now, Secrets of a Midlife Crisis. Diana James, I want to thank you so much. You are the author of The Real Brass Ring. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
This is interesting, not only from the references that I have made to technology, and of course it always seems as though that's always the answer. Reboot it. Or if you're having problems with your car, you know, restart it. Start it again. Or, you know, those kinds of things. Unplug it and plug it back in, if you will. Some way to revitalize, if you will. And it sounds to me like that's what you're sort of what you're talking about in the context of living one's purpose. And a lot of people are still looking for their purpose. There are those of us who we feel like, and I say it in that context, we feel like we found our purpose. And yet, I'm 54. There are those days when I wonder, am I really on target? Is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? Because I asked that question when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and I left radio for a while to go work in a warehouse. And I had a lot of fun doing it. It was a great experience. But I sure missed this. And so this, you know, I guess that was the sign that I guess it must be on purpose. So that was sort of my reboot of sorts. Is this something that's just done at midlife, or is this something that we need to consider doing on a regular basis, sort of regular personal maintenance?
Well, the way I look at it is that I have kind of an unusual, well, a usual in some ways and unusual in others, in that I had kind of an outing, or I was outed by a psychic. I was a little older than 20. I was 38, and on my 38th birthday, I decided to go see Sonia Choquette. And, you know, as many people might know, she's internationally known and very famous psychic now. But back then, she was just pretty much in her early stages and wrote a couple books. And I decided to go see her just for a birthday gift. And I really thought when I walked into her office that she was going to tell me I was the cat's meow, because I had gone down a course, kind of like your warehouse job, in that I had tried something on that was 100% scripted from my parents. You know, they had said, you know, you can be one of these four things, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, or an engineer. And consequently, one of my brothers is a doctor, one of my brothers is a lawyer, and I was the one who said, well, I didn't want to do any of those in particular, wasn't so good at numbers, didn't like arguing, didn't want to, you know, get into all that messy stuff with the doctor part. And I said, well, you know, I'll just go into marketing, and I pretty much marketed to engineering-type companies, and that's what I did for a living. Because somehow, some way, I had heard that, you know, making big money was the formula for success. So I went down that road. I got a degree from Northwestern in marketing and ended up being very successful and had lots of clients all over the Midwest and got the big house across from the lake and did all that stuff that you're supposed to do, very much like we see on TV these days with a lot of these, you know, Real Housewives and the Kardashians. And, you know, the more stuff you get, the happier you're going to get. Well, I had all the stuff, so when I showed up to Sonia's, I expected her to tell me, you know, sister, you're on the right track, you're doing everything great, just keep it up. But instead, what she did for me is she completely undressed me. She said, everything about your life is wrong. This isn't a mini reboot. This is a macro reboot. This is an entire system reboot, if we're going to talk technology. None of the operating systems were right. I didn't have the right partner. She said I didn't have the right, I wasn't pursuing any of my passion areas. I was clinically depressed, and she didn't tell me at the time because she didn't have to, but I was 190 pounds, so it was pretty self-evident that I was having some symptoms of not being 100% happy. And she said, you're this writer, teacher, healer, and an actor. She goes, you can go back on stage. She said, why didn't you ever pursue that? Well, kind of like you had mentioned with your interest in going into radio, I'd always had that desire, passion, just overwhelming joy whenever I get on stage. And I did it, of course, through high school, one of the high school leads and plays. And then I tried it a little bit in college, and my father shut it down because he said, tell you what, you are not going to pursue a horrible career like acting, and therefore not going to pay for it. You're going to get out of it. And I did that. I followed all those rules. But she was the one who kind of opened me up and said, look, you really need to push that button, start over, and every single solitary part of your life, she said, is like an unlit Christmas tree. There wasn't one single light that was blinking that should have been on that was on. Mm-hmm. So quite frankly, I had the whole rude awakening and kind of a horrible experience in a way that I still had three kids to raise, and I had mouths to feed, and I had this big place to pay for, and I had a relationship I've been in for 16 years. So it's a little hard when someone says just, shuck it all and start over. And I didn't know what to do. So initially, I was completely overwhelmed, even more depressed, and I didn't know where to go from there.
Hmm. You have a website called Live Your Everything, and I like the name of it. It's a good-looking website, too, a very, very nice, easy to work through, but in particular the name, because you said something real interesting that I can't relate to, because my father, in my case, said, be sure you get into a job you love doing because you're going to be doing it for a long time. Didn't tell me what that job was, didn't even give me a hint. He just said, find something you love doing, because he told me at that time, he said, because I got stuck. And I knew I didn't want to get stuck. And whether I've been living under a lucky star, I have a lucky rabbit's foot somewhere, or whatever it is, it seems as though I've been in the right place at the right time most of my life, although my intellect hasn't quite grasped that concept yet, because I still stress over, going from day to day, week to week, month to month sometimes. You'd think doing these kinds of programs and getting this kind of information, oh man, I would just be on it. And nothing could be farther from the truth. Life is good. Don't get me wrong. But it doesn't matter how many books you read, how many people you talk with, how many seminars you go to, how many CDs you listen to, or whatever it is that you think is going to, I keep looking for, where's that on switch where I get mine, kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think your father sounds very enlightened for the day. I think mine was more traditional, the babies of the post-depression families that, said, you get the job, you keep it, like it used to be. You get your retirement, and then you're done, and then you finally get to play golf and chill out.
Yeah.
Well, those messages, I think, are shifting, and that was about safety, security. You've got to be able to eat, so if you do these four things, you'll be successful. Now, it sounds like your father was way from a different track than mine, which is beautiful. Today, I do think parents are becoming much more interested in kind of the health and overall wellness and the emotional wellness of the kids. So I think our messages are shifting now to where your dad was early on. Now we're more like, you have to do something that you love. And the way I look at it now, having gone through this metamorphosis, I had to change every aspect of my life. I ended up losing 60 pounds. I went back to the stage at 40. I decided, hey, she said I could do it, so I'm going to give it a shot. And I went into community theater, I had to start with really baby steps because I was still a really big girl at the time, and I didn't have the confidence that I could really do it. So I started with community theater, and my very first opportunity was on my birthday, and it was like the play Oliver, and I was sure that, you know, I was going to get some lead or something because Sonia said I could do this, right? And I auditioned, and by far it was the worst audition and most frightening experience of my life here on earth so far. So scary when they tell you to sing. You haven't sung in 20 years in front of a room full of people. I was so terrified. My hands were shaking. I had to pin them behind my back and squeak out, "Wouldn't it be lovely," in front of a room full of people. Now, horrifying and terrifying as it was, when I got back to the car after that audition, I jumped up and down. It was Chicago. It was snowy. It was like 20 below zero like it always is here. But I was so happy that I showed up. That was kind of a linchpin for me. That changed everything. At least I showed up. At least I was there. At least I gave it the college try. And everything moved in a path from there. So after that came the call. I finally got the call, and I was thought she was going to offer me the role of Nancy or some big thing. And she offered me the role of Townsperson 1. And I swear, Richard, it was as if I won the Academy Award. I didn't care. I was now an actor. That's all that mattered. I was going to be on stage, you know, hopping up and down the steps and swinging arms with people. But it felt so good to get those, just the lights on my face, because that's part of my passion area, that it didn't matter what I did. I was just delighted to finally take that first move. And you know how it is. The course is windy, and it turns from here and there. But eventually, it all lined up, and now I'm a SAG actor, and I've done 5 movies this year, and one with Paul Sorvino that will be coming out, I think it's early 2015. And so the whole thing did follow this course. I needed to get, you know, a shake in the back and have somebody grab me and say, "You've got to make these shifts and changes." And so for me, that was kind of, it was very different than your experience. So it just sounds like your dad was really enlightened early on.
Well, I thank him for those words and all that he did share with me. Obviously, as a kid growing up, I never thought that, but I can look back now in hindsight, and yes, he was very wise in those particular areas. He did his best to help us all out. But one of the things that I have to share with you about my father is that I always hear on some of these programs about how when we're talking about getting the things that we want, we have to sacrifice. Got to give up this to give up that and get that and give up this to get that. Well, I asked both my parents this very question in regards to the fact that they had a family of 6, the 2 of them and 6 kids. And I shared with them this observation from my guests. I says, you know, a lot of folks say, you know, you have to sacrifice. I says, did you guys sacrifice, you know, your dreams and this and that and the other? No. He says, we knew what we wanted to do, and you kids were it. And so I at the same time, I look at the whole aspect of sacrifice, and again, we are talking about this whole business of this midlife reboot, if you will, or transformation, that it isn't from, and I'd like you to elaborate on this. If I'm not elaborating in the direction that you're speaking, please say so. But if your life's purpose is taking the left fork rather than the right fork, you're not sacrificing the right fork in exchange for the left. There is nothing to sacrifice. You are going to be on purpose. Whereas
I couldn't agree with you more, actually.
Yeah. Now, granted, I was born and raised in Catholic Church, and of course, sacrifice is, and suffering especially, is part of the training. But I've learned that you don't have to sacrifice anything. If your goal is whatever it is, what's the sacrifice? You're just doing those things. Now, if you want those other things, you can go after them too. Am I wrong that we can have it all, or is there a certain point at which we have to say, you know, there are certain things that I really should focus on? I really don't want it all. I really don't have to have it all. What I want is to be whole, to be at peace.
So interesting. It's so interesting that you're bringing this up, just because I just finished the Universal Light Expo, and it was all weekend.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to make this presentation, and so many people came to speak with me after. And what's really interesting, to touch on the sacrifice issue, is every time I hear someone's story, the sacrifice is in going down the prescribed road or the should road or the if I don't do this, you know, the scarcity road. If I don't do this, I won't eat. I'm so terrified I'm going to go through my savings. Those are the ones that I see that are sacrificing. Anyone who came and spoke to me that had taken the other road, the road that feels more towards fulfillment, towards passion, towards that little, I call it like a juiciness or an excitement inside, mm-hmm. when you do that one thing that just feels incredibly awesome during the day, those are the people that have a light shining from their eyes. Those are the ones who are excited and happy. I don't think, and I know I don't feel any sacrifice in doing this new work. Writing, Sonia said, write every day. She said, you have stories, people are going to love your stories. And I have very, very dramatic stories. It's basically its own soap opera, what I had to go through to get here. But every step and turn that I took was exciting and fun. Yes, sometimes difficult, sometimes I took a few steps backwards. But there was nothing about it that felt like a sacrifice. It felt more like an adventure. Mm-hmm. What was hard for me is, and I'm looking at, and this is something that haven't shared too much yet, but I look at things where there's two tracks that people are in right now, and I think we're emerging towards this, the financial track, which sometimes can feel like a sacrifice. And that might be the one. I have a marketing business, for example. That marketing business, as a consultant, I make significant money every day. If I want to do that every single day, there's a certain day rate, it's competitive, and people pay that. When I'm an actor, and I'm a SAG actor, and I'm the lucky one, I'm the one who's in the union and gets paid to work. A lot of people act and they don't make a dime, or they pay to act, even the opposite. Mm. I make $100 a day. $100 a day as in the union. So I look at the two tracks. The financial track right now is supporting a lot of this new work. It's still supporting my family. It's still successful, and I still can do the acting. So I have the passion track and the financial track. And the financial track I know is supporting the passion track, so it doesn't feel like a sacrifice anymore because I had to shift my thinking about it. Otherwise, you know, I work on things like oil and gas or, you know, airplane wings or, you know, gadgets or insurance and topics that, quite frankly, are not something I think I was, you know, born to know everything about and isn't super exciting sometimes. But I just keep remembering, wow, it feels so good to get that kind of support right now while this whole new venture is being launched. It gives me the chance to spend time on book number two. It gives me the chance to make sure everybody's cared for. So I'm looking at the two tracks as right now parallel, and eventually they will. I hope that they'll synthesize into all on the passion track. But I don't know too many people that just find the passion track, get on it, stay on it from beginning to end, and they're deliriously happy every day.
Yeah.
I haven't met many of them. I don't know about you.
And as much as I love this, the work that I do, there are those days when I would just assume stay home. Unfortunately, I can also do my job from home, but just stay home, you know, and not do much of anything or do the things around the house that I want to do. You know, I like to define... define terms. Now, you've in just the space of less than 20 minutes, you've probably defined what I'm about to ask you. But I'm going to ask you to maybe codify it down into maybe a sentence or two. What is the brass ring? How do you define it?
Thank you for the question, by the way, because I love answering that question. The brass ring is openness, awareness, availability, and taking action towards any opportunity that resonates towards purpose or towards, you know, your highest or greatest good. It's being able to recognize the opportunity, see it, grab it, bring it to your chest, and act on it. And that's how I define the real brass ring. A lot of people pass up opportunities that might come their way, and I am constantly going in the window. I don't come in the door. Oftentimes when I've made all these transitions, even getting into the acting field, which is incredibly difficult at 40 years old, you know, to move from community theater and to become then into an actual agent represented actor in the city of Chicago is really tough because there's a million people who have been doing this for a long time. But, for example, I sent my resume out after doing all this community theater thinking, oh, for sure, just because I want it, some agent in the city is going to recognize my incredible talent here and sign me on. So I sent all these kind of doctored up resumes because I had to kind of fluff it up a little bit because I didn't really have much experience. And I wanted to work in TV and film, and I just sent them out. And I had to wait not 1 month, not 2 months, 3 months. By the fourth month, nobody had responded. So I thought, okay, got to hang up your shoes here. This isn't going to work out. You're never going to be able to do, you know, commercials or TV or film. And then I surrendered. I completely surrendered. For me, sometimes I say I quit, but I don't quit like I quit like in a bad way, stomping off. I quit, which for me represents surrender. And I surrendered, and I said, okay, that's it. You know, you're just going to have to wait a little bit. You're going to rethink this, regroove. And the minute I surrendered, I got a phone call. And that phone call was from an agent, and they were in kind of a weird part of town, not necessarily a part of town I would ever visit before or even today. And they said, we'll let you come and audition for us, and you have to be at this certain day and time. I canceled everything. Of course, I showed up. I was ready to go. I did this entire monologue. I threw myself at this person, literally, because I would have done anything to get in. And I took this, like, incredibly big dramatic bow, and the woman's looking at me like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, you're so bad. This is never going to work. And I thought, okay, that's it. I just killed the only opportunity I'm ever going to get. I kind of slinking towards the door. And she said, but I'll tell you what, if you're willing to be on our website, we will sign you. You're very green and you need to do a lot of work, but we'll sign you. And I kind of looked at her and I thought to myself, no, wait a minute, I have to pay you to be on your website, and then you'll sign me. Isn't it the other way around? Aren't you supposed to be my agent and you get me work? And then we all share. And anyway, because that opportunity came up, I literally had the, like, you know, that kind of, like, moment you can kind of see something. Like, it was the brass ring moment for me. Mm-hmm. I grabbed it. I didn't care what. She could have probably charged me any amount of money. I would have said yes. But it wasn't that much anyway. And I said, sure, fine, signed up, done. 2 weeks later, I got my first Comcast commercial. And it's because I was willing to go down there, cancel everything else, show up, do the best I could do, even though probably was not very good, and just still keep, you know, looking with, you know, such earnest and intention that I would have done anything to get in the door somewhere. And then, of course, as it turns out, I'm not with them any longer, and the whole thing just evolves into that little breadcrumb path that goes back and forth. So that is not a short answer. Sorry, that was a very long answer, but that is what I think the real brass ring is, and that's what this book is all about, finding those opportunities and using the laws of attraction to get those to come to you as readily as you would like them to.
And to that, I want to spin off in that direction, because when that came out several years ago, I remember talking with some of my guests, and they had criticism for it because they said it's incomplete. It's not finished. And it's unfortunate that it's not finished. This is them. It's unfortunate that it's not finished because it's really doing a disservice to the public. Well, what I've come to understand, and especially from what you have just said, is that in a manner of speaking, it was incomplete. And it's only incomplete because people missed it. Because if I'm not mistaken, did it not make reference to the fact that you could have whatever you wanted in that regard, but there was a point at which you had to be living on purpose. You had to be living your purpose. You had to be on your path. This was not a magic genie. And I think that's how a lot of people interpreted it.
Again, I completely agree with you. Everyone, I think when it first came out, thought, I won $1 million. And all of a sudden, they're like, a paper bag was going to end up landing on your front door, and you're going to go, wow, here's my $1 million, and open it up, and then you start counting your change. It doesn't work like that at all. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I have a whole second book that's going to be dedicated towards kind of drilling down into the next layers of how do you really manifest what you want. But you need to remember the key nugget is the heart does not compromise. The heart doesn't know compromise. Mm. It only knows authenticity. It only knows love. It only knows connection. It only knows wholeness, as you mentioned. And when you're asking for something, first of all, a lot of people tried to use it for its other people. You can only manage your own circle. You can't manage somebody else's circle.
No, you can't.
I've talked to people who said, I want my wife to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I want my wife to feel peace. Well, first of all, you're not your wife. Second of all, you're not on her journey. You don't have her contracts. You don't have any of her. You're not her. Get out of her circle. You're
exactly.
not over there. You're over
exactly.
here. What do you, you know, let's focus on what you can manage. And so part of it is they were directing in all these ways. And the other thing is I think very often there's, I found that I call it basically there's five E's to this empowered manifestation. And the whole next book is going to be dedicated to that. But it's going to touch on all of the elements that you need to have lined up in order for your manifestations to come quickly, easily, and flow. Part of which I mentioned already is the surrender piece. Because even if you put your intentions out there, I have this thing and it's like a wish box. And I get really clear and specific. I write down exactly what I want, why I want it, what it is, and how I'm going to know when I get it. So some of those are just the goal aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it be a dollar figure or I want only, you know, Hollywood B movies now or, you know, whatever it might be, I know what it means when it's being achieved. And I oftentimes get really clear and specific, and then I put it away into this box because I don't sit there and stare at it. I don't like focus on it. I don't try to like become obsessed with it. I let it go. If I've done all my part, and my part includes my energy and my effort and all my enthusiasm and everything I'm talking about is focused on what I would like, I then get to let the other half decide that we can't see, which is your, you know, the whole spiritual aspect and guides and anyone else who's going to be delivering this to us. I let them do their job.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like that combination. So everybody thought, you know, a push. This is not a push button thing. I think we're rewarded for our effort in many ways, but we also have to be lined up on the inside. You have to feel good about it. You know, I've had someone just say, "Oh, I had this terrible job, and I got laid off, and I took the next job that came along because I felt so pressured to do it, and then I just got laid off again, but I hated both of them."
Well,
what a gift.
Yeah. Well, in 2008, when I started hearing about all of the people being laid off, hundreds of thousands of individuals, and of course, someone criticized me for saying, well, that's easy for you to say because you have a job. What I said was, I'll bet you that 99.9% of those people who lost their jobs hated their job. And maybe it was 100%. But I'm in agreement with you there when stuff like that happens. Now, I had 1 year, actually, Diana, that I was laid off four times in 1 year.
Wow.
And the last time I was laid off after a day.
Oh, my goodness.
And they called me and said, well, we're not going to need you because we're going to actually reallocate those resources in a different direction. So we won't be needing your services. And I thought, okay. And I remember, too, applying twice. Again, laid off four times. The first two times I applied for unemployment. By the time I was eligible for the first check, I had found another job. And the second time was the same thing. Applied. By the time I was eligible, I had found another job. So the third and the fourth time, I said, I'm not even going to bother because I'm going to find another job within 2 weeks. It's not worth wasting my time and energy. But I have a feeling that that's what happens. And a lot of times, a lot of these people, they get into a job, as we're speaking of work, where this is what the family has done for generations. Whether it's a coal mine or construction or a flower shop, it doesn't matter what it is. And it's like, wait a minute, that may have been great-great-granddad's or grandma's, but that doesn't mean it's your life's purpose. And I think that we get told these messages kind of like what you were told, and we get stuck like my father did. You know, and so I think it's really very interesting. And we're going to have more interesting things to say here on the program as we continue. Diane, your middle name is Bischoff?
Bischoff, yes.
Bischoff. And it's Diane Bischoff James. She's the author of The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. You are the captain. You are the pilot. Whatever euphemism you want to use, it is up to you. It is up to me. And we're going to talk a little bit when we get back about a phrase that it doesn't set too well in the metaphysical circle or the spiritual realm, but we're going to talk about it anyway. And it is, when do I get mine on Tell Me Your Story?
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Thanks for staying with us. We are talking with Diane Bischoff James. She's written the book, The Real Brass Ring, and another message I know you probably heard, I think you even made reference to it as we were talking in the first segment. I know I've heard this time and time again. I hear it on television programs over and over again, be they fictional or otherwise, that if you just work hard and you just put your nose to the grindstone or what, again, whatever euphemism you want to use, you're going to make it. You will have the things that you, or in this analogy, you'll be able to attain the brass ring. And there are those out there who have worked and worked, and they've worked hard, and they've put forth that effort to work hard, and they haven't achieved even remotely that which they were promised in regards to this brass ring. And as I said, I remember sharing this with somebody, and I said, but you know, the real irony is it doesn't set real well in the metaphysical or the spiritual realm, because it ain't about working hard in that area. How do we balance this dichotomy?
Well, I think the question is, you know, what is the objective, isn't it? Working hard towards becoming, oh, I have to be a senior VP now because, you know, I started as, you know, the support person, and then I've moved up in the corporate world, and now I got to break that glass ceiling, and I'm going to be vice president or president. I don't think that has necessarily anything to do with why we came here. Nothing is particularly linear in the spiritual world, and in this world, it's all about resonating. And so I think our goals have been, you know, misaligned in many, many cases. What I'm finding is that there's really only two objectives. There's only two reasons we came here at all. Number one, it's to love something or someone or some feeling or some way that you experience your world or your life. And the second piece is to learn something. This is the workout place. This is where we came, where we have a lot of things where we either aren't not speaking our truth, or we don't express our feelings, or we don't acknowledge ourselves as, you know, the self-love aspect. And there's so many things we came here to learn that have everything to do with wholeness from a spirituality perspective. And we're still trying to figure out whether we can get a bigger house or a faster car or, a better cell phone. I mean, it took me forever just to break free from my flip phone because I liked it and I didn't want to go with the next version, but I only did it so I could communicate with people. But that's our, you know, we were after all the trappings and all the things. But the real aspect, and this is where I've changed my entire paradigm for my life. I try to see if there's one thing during the day, I call it a love it inventory, if there's one thing I can do during the day that I can say, I really loved how that felt, or I loved, you know, I sometimes just love taking a walk at night out with the dog because it's perfectly silent. Nobody else is out there. It's me and the trees, and just experiencing that peace of, you know, that 10 minutes of serenity. That's something I can say I love to do. And I don't care if the dog's there or not. I'm still getting what I need out of this experience. So I think the problem is that we're measuring all the wrong stuff.
Mm.
If you could take any situation, you either loved something about it, or you loved the person, you loved the experience. I quite frankly love my little red convertible. Every time I'm in it, it's just pure fun. You know, the wind in your hair and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you said, you know what, that was really not fun. I didn't like it. It didn't sit right with me. Those are a pair of shoes I never want to put on again. I learned something. So I work with the clients that come and see me. I have these 12 rules, and they're called the shortcuts for happy living, because I've been a business executive for 20 years, and I'm always asked one question. You know, they're like, give me the executive summary. Just cut to the chase. Don't give me any of the fluff. They want to know, what do I got to do to get the job done? So I put together these 12 rules, and they changed the way that I live my life. And I've read thousands of metaphysical books, listened to thousands of tapes, and I tried to synthesize all this great work into the key ideas and the key messages. And so that's what's also in the book as well. And some of them, feeling good is the mecca. That's what makes your day. Mm. It's not if you got that, you know, you were able to go out and buy some brand new laptop or something. It's about, did you feel good for 1 minute doing anything that day? So yeah. I try to look at the 10-minute rule each week. You know, for 10 minutes each week, I want to do something that feels awesome. And it changes everything for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can certainly understand that. It's interesting how the preamble to our Constitution says that we have the right to life, liberty. However, this is what's interesting, and I've posed this to a number of people, and they find it rather intriguing, because I certainly have. We do not have the right to happiness. We do have the right to pursue it, but we can't have it, like life and liberty. And I was sitting there thinking about that, going, what were these guys thinking? How is it that you can pursue life? You don't have to pursue life, and you don't have to pursue liberty, but you have to pursue happiness? I just wonder what their mindset was in that regard, because that's what you're talking about, is finding those moments when you are joyful, you are happy, you are feeling at peace, and whatever that feeling is for you, that of contentment and centeredness.
Exactly, and I think it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating, because I had never considered that before, that they considered happiness to be elusive, in that you're never going to get it because you're always going to be pursuing it. So that's a magnificent find.
Well,
I don't
and
know
if
it's accurate.
Well, true. I'd like to know what these guys were thinking. But then again, I have to wonder too. Maybe their mindset was clouded by the fact that they were in the midst of a revolutionary war, and they were literally fighting for their lives, and so forth, and their families, and all of that kind of stuff. But this is fascinating. Again, I want to reiterate the title. It is The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. And when I used the analogy of the difference between a tugboat and a superliner, because I remember hearing about turning your life around, or, you know, making businesses making decisions, and this was more what it was geared towards, that the bigger the business, the harder it is for the business to turn, to change, to maneuver through the treacherous waters, if you were. Whereas a smaller vessel can virtually turn on a dime, you know, and get the heck out of there, out of trouble. So I'm wondering, is it all about perception in terms of changing a life course, as to whether or not we can do it quickly, or it's going to take weeks, months, or years, or maybe I'll have to come back in another lifetime to make the adjustments?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it depends on, again, we have to get back to what is the goal and what are you measuring.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, I've talked to some people who are clients that say, you know, one of the things that makes me really, really happy is to put my hands in the earth. You know, they just want to be able to garden. And for whatever reason, that is something they've just never made time for, and they don't want to, they have not made that a space in their life. And of course, that's a very simple fix, simple, easy fix. You know, there's some place, now there's even shared gardens if you're in the city. There's places where you can go where that experience, whatever it is, it makes you feel really good on the inside, you can get to it very quickly. In some cases, I think there are bigger shifts, which means you have to start to maybe study, go back to school, or you have to study, or you have to actually pursue another whole course. But I have not yet met anybody who decided to make a shift. For example, someone I just met very recently wanted to go back and become a holistic healer, but to combine all their passion area. They love horses, and they love education. And so what they decided to do is go back into the equine field where they can actually work with people who use horses for therapy. And that's an entire area of study. So that's a longer road in that you have to actually pursue degrees and you have to actually, you know, find a place that's going to hire people who are trained in this area. But it's also kind of a budding area because it's very good for either young children who have emotional issues or grown-ups who just want to feel more centered. And so, and it's also actually part of rehabilitation therapy sometimes for people with addiction, et cetera. So it's a growing field, but that's a longer course of study. But I do know the woman who said, I made this choice, I still have my day job, so she still has her financial track, but she's going back to school for this and putting the night hours in to get the new track. She's elated. She doesn't care how much she's going to have to put towards it. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it is making those shifts, although it's going to require a significant investment of your energy and your time and your focus, and you actually are going to have to go back and do some study, perhaps if that's what's going to take the change. The answer is get going. It's that baby step. It's the one step. You know, somebody said, I always wanted to be a singer. And I'm always like, well, have you ever thought about going to the nursing homes? They love singers, and they don't care if you can sing or you can't sing. At least you get out there, and you're getting that experience of having an audience and having someone that's building your confidence by just being willing and happy that you're there. Hmm. So I think it's everyone's like, oh, I'm never going to make it to the stage of the opera. Well, who cares? It's the fact that you enjoy singing. Mm-hmm. You do acting because you love acting. Because, mm-hmm. you know, the one in a million person makes $1 million a movie. The rest of us make $100. But I do it because I love it. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it. And when I don't do it long enough, I miss it. And then I, just like you had with your experience on the radio, I have to eventually get back to it if I take off more than a couple months because I start to get kind of antsy. And it just makes me, it's just so much fun. So, again, it's what we're measuring, how we're measuring, and what we're actually willing to invest, not to sacrifice, but to invest and move towards that.
It is an extraordinary journey sometimes, and you don't know what's coming. I've had a couple of those where the most recent one was a little over 8 years ago when my wife and I both lost our jobs. This was before the downturn in 2005, 2006. And my station that I was working for, the station I was working for was sold, and they weren't keeping any of the old personnel. And my wife actually, and this is after we knew that this was happening to me, quit her job. And, you know, and I remember when she told me, I said, in my head, I'm going, and do you know that I'm unemployed too? You know, but I had no fear. I don't know why at the time. I was like, all I knew was I wasn't concerned about it. There was a certain element of peace about it. It was very interesting. And it wasn't that I hated my job, that I didn't like working there, because those kinds of things happen in my business. But my time was done. Matter of fact, I think that the real case was that one station that I worked for many, many years was consumed by another corporation that owned the station I was working for. And so they ended up moving into the same building in the same suite. And that told me, oh, you've got some unfinished business with these people. Well, when the station was sold and I was let go, I then knew, my business is done. So I could rest with that. And then we moved here to Santa Barbara. And things began to unfold here in a rather remarkable way. One is I got to the ocean, which is where I've been wanting to get to for a long, long time. And so I think that as you speak of these things, it's really very, very important for people to remember. What I'd like to have you do now, you said that you have, you call them shortcuts. And I have to wonder if they're really shortcuts. I mean, there are things that you suggest that people do. There, I think you said there were 12 of them?
Well, there's 14.
14.
There were 12 to start, and then two extra added on later on in the book because I learned more and grew. But 14 total.
Now, your number, I got to tell you something. I'm sorry, but I have to take issue with number one. And I'll tell you why. Because I worked for a TV station here in Santa Barbara, and every time there was something that didn't look right, didn't sound right, in other words, it was from the broadcast standard, from my perspective, I'm a stickler for those kinds of things, it wasn't right. But every time something like, and I would make a comment about it, they'd say, oh no, it's all good, because they didn't care. So I want you to explain rule number one, it's all good.
Well, it really touches on the last two points that you were discussing, that you had the extraordinary ability to recognize that shift that you were making at the time when you did lose your position, mm-hmm. you didn't run it from fear and lack. Actually, the universe is already perfectly in working order. It's because we operate from lack and fear that everything seems like it's not good. And the lack is, of course, you know, not enough money for food. So we have the scarcity issue. We have what, and one of mine thing, I was terrified. It took me 10 years to write this book because I was afraid that if I put it out, somebody might not like it. So I had fear of acceptance. I was terrified that my family would reject me. And consequently, this year I've had all kinds of issues with my family because of the book, because I was taught you don't put your stories out there. Mm. We cover them up, we sweep them, we put them under the rug, and they stay there nice and quiet, and nobody ever stomps on that rug. That rug is going to be there forever, and that's where all the family secrets are kept.
Well,
you know?
I've got you beat by 4 years.
So the funny thing is, it's the fear that keeps us feeling that we are actually, that everything is not good. Mm. The truth is, what do we really need? There's only a couple things we really need. You need water, mm-hmm. right? You mm-hmm. need a bathroom, which might contain the water. You need a place to lay your head, and you need one outfit. That's all we really need. Everything else is a choice. So if you think about it, the people who are in prison right now have about all you really need. They got their orange outfits, they got a sink, they have the toilet, mm-hmm. and they're sitting and they're being fed. That's all we really need. So everything else is a choice, mm-hmm. and everything else is in perfect working order, because eventually, if you decide to never get up tomorrow and you're going to continue to lay there, someone will probably come in and say, okay, we got to go take you somewhere, we're going to take you to our house, we may get you to a shelter, whatever. But eventually, you could just lay all day. Now, most of us don't do that because we are active and we came here to be engaged. But the other point that's super interesting about it's all good is that the universe supports all of these purpose-driven activities. So your opportunities, because you knew that your shifts were going to lead you in the right direction and you weren't operating from fear, came probably more quickly and smoothly, because if you are on purpose for 1 minute or for 30 years, the universe doesn't look at time. They're just saying, he's on purpose. He's doing the right thing. He's moving to the ocean. He loves the ocean. The ocean makes him resonate. Let's get him an opportunity here. So the minute you start resonating with yourself, you get like a matching energy. If you're off track and you're still doing the warehouse job and you don't love it, there's no other warehouse jobs for you. There might be. You might be able to get one, but you might just hate it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about, I think it's all about this, like, I look at it as like a matching grant. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing X, Y, and Z. The matching grant comes in at X, Y, and Z, and I cannot tell you how many beautiful and amazing things have happened since I stopped ducking and hiding with the book. I had to stop. I wrote a book, and then I was afraid when I wrote the book that somebody would actually read it. You know, it's all those fear-based issues. Well, what if somebody doesn't like it? But the best part about it was that I realized once I went through a bit of rejection, which is normal. You know, of course, nobody can get the thing published. So you have to get, I have my 20 rejection letters, and I'm going to do something with them someday. I haven't decided if I'm going to make a quilt or a flag or something, but I'm going to do something with all those rejection letters. But when I first went through it, I thought, oh, I just wasted 10 years of my life writing this thing. But, of course, one day someone comes along who is a Red Wheel Weiser, is a publisher in San Francisco, and they came along, and they were pursuing me hot and heavy. So, you know, it's one of those things where once I surrendered and allowed the right partner to line up with me, it wasn't hard. It was super easy. But I also, you have to also deal with all your fears. So I had to learn, the learning aspect of that is, guess what? People are going to reject you. People are not everyone's going to like it. People are going to think it's not healthy or sound or whatever. But I don't have to, it's how I respond to it.
Yeah.
And I decided to just keep coming in the window, so I didn't really care. This was going to work, come hell or high water. I was going to make this work. I didn't have any idea how, but I just knew I was so determined that it was going to work. And since then, it's been almost like gifts. The minute I relax, another gift comes. I just won one of the top 10 books by Aspire Magazine for 2015, and I've been honored that they chose The Real Brass Ring for one of their top 10 books. Again, just a pure gift that came out of just being present and moving forward no matter what.
Now, when you say that, your rule 7 is focus on receiving. And I've even struggled with, or shared, I should say, the struggle that folks have with the whole concept, especially around the holidays. You hear this all the time. It is better to give than to receive. There's only one flaw in that. In order for there to be a giver, there must be a receiver, and vice versa. You can't have one without the other.
Exactly.
I mean, the universe requires and will cause there to be an exchange one way or the other. And so when you say focus on receiving, it sounds to me like what you're asking us to do is open yourself up to and allow yourself to receive. Don't discount yourself. I mean, it's almost as though each one of these rules, it's like some of these could actually be piled together into one rule. But you make different points for each one of the 14. But in this case, it's like this is so, to me, this is so critical, because if we're not willing to receive, then how are we going to get where we want to go in terms of our life's purpose?
And it's all about trust.
Mm-hmm.
Receiving is about trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, especially from, you know, my generation growing up, is that we were like, back to one of your earlier points, is that it was about work, 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 drive, 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 do, do, do. Well, I don't know about you, but my to-do list never gets shorter. It's the same length every single time I check stuff off, more stuff gets on that list. So for many, many, many years, and this is an area where I'm just now actually kind of embodying myself, is trusting that the universe has your back and that everything is good. And trusting that things are working exactly as they should, because I'm the achiever. You know, I'm the one that had to go get all straight A's in college and be magna cum laude because I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And I thought that little thing's going to give me a gold star. Well, the truth is, you graduate, you don't even get a high five. You know,
yeah.
Nobody ever says, oh, good girl. That all has to come from the inside. But instead of just the doing part, that specific rule about receiving, you could translate into the word trust. Trust that this reopening, this beautiful reopening, that I had to go through it, a complete metamorphosis. You know, the lose weight, the body's falling apart. I had to get rid, you know, end a relationship, go through cougar dating, find a new relationship, tell the kids, which, trust me, nothing is harder in the world than, you know, having to go through the divorce and trying to maintain healthy, happy children while you're going through this major life transition. Get rid of the mega mansion because someone's got to pay for that thing, and I didn't want to pay for it anymore. And, you know, and to make all these shifts and come out on the other side and say, it's all good, it doesn't mean that there weren't tears, there wasn't pain, there wasn't, you know, the I give up days or the, you know, forget it, this is never going to work out kind of days. It just meant overall this was working exactly as it should so that I can feel these things so maybe someday I can relate to somebody else. So I had to see in the long picture that this was a marathon. This was not a sprint.
Yeah.
Somehow I thought this thing was going to be a sprint. And I think that's the mistake that we make with the it's all good. It is all good.
I think that it's... Yeah,
I
was going to say, I think that that's, again, it goes back to the issue of sort of definitions and perception as well. But nonetheless, when you look at it from that perspective, I was looking at it at the TV station from a rather micro perspective in terms of the little details of the workings of the facility, and thought, thinking, you know, if this place is going to improve, which was has always been what I've been about. I've even worked for a radio station that wasn't interested in any improvement. They were a tax write-off for the corporate owner. And so they didn't want any improvements. They didn't want to go up in the ratings because that would increase their value and create a problem for them at tax time. But I didn't think that was the case with the TV station. But nonetheless, I we go through that. You talk about trust as well. This whole issue with losing our jobs in 2006 brought about even a moment when we sat watching television on April 1st after both of us being unemployed. And my wife came to me and she says, I'm very concerned because, you know, I'm not sure what we're going to do. And I says, well, you know, and again, this is still coming from this feeling of contentment and peace pervaded for several weeks, if not months. But at that moment, I said, well, you know, I've read a lot of books and I've interviewed a lot of people and I've been to a lot of seminars. And the one thing that comes out that tells me we're okay is that when you, because she says, I feel like we're at the edge of a precipice. I says, well, when you're on the edge of a precipice or cliff, they say you do two things. You jump and you trust. And that's what we did. And that's really what you're saying here is that there are those moments. And I'm guessing that in our conversation here today, you've had those moments where the mind was going, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. But you knew that you knew that you knew, and you jumped because you trusted that the universe was going to be there to take care of you.
Well, I also had a little incentive from my children, actually, and having had children, I realized that I went through this amazing program called the Hoffman Institute, and it's actually in California, and they also have East and 50 different countries, and 90,000 people have gone through it. Mm. And what they allowed me to do is kind of scrub the inside. I had all those issues of being a perfectionist and looking for everything that's wrong all the time and always looking for the gap analysis. And I had all the issues of no self-love and fears and anxieties, and they allow you to actually get rid of every message that's not yours. So I got rid of all my father and mother's old programming and come out this fresh, clean, new spirit baby that kind of comes out and is all happy and elated. And because of that, it allowed me to actually look at the world with brand new eyes. But when you have a lot of stuff on the inside, it is very challenging to trust that the universe knows exactly what it's doing. You are pursuing whatever lesson you need to learn, and the minute you get that lesson, it's going to stop. And when you pursue things that feel good to your heart, all good stuff's going to come to you because you're getting your matching grant. It's hard to know all that if you are so steeped on the inside, you know, with darkness, you know, darkness for yourself and fears and sadness and grief. And a lot of people that come to the Midlife Reboot workshops, many of them are in tears in the first few minutes of the session because we talk all about everything that's stopping you. And many of those things that are stopping people are the bad programming where we started our whole conversation, the messages that are inauthentic, the messages that said you're not good enough or you had to cross those, you know, cross your T's and dot your I's, or you're a bad girl, or you're, it's amazing what people hear. We don't mean to, but a lot of our parents tell us things that we have no filter to filter out until you're about 12.
Yeah.
And all of that gets absorbed into a cellular level. So that's where a lot of the fear and the lack issues stem from.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, I've been quite blessed with my parents in that they have, for the most part, I would say, given me some darn good messages, both my mother and my father. Then, of course, the areas in which I chose to, research and search. I tell you that I officially began my search, in quotes, in all caps, boldface type, at the age of 17. And I haven't stopped. And this radio program is sort of an outgrowth of that because I'm still looking. I'm still searching. Not in a paranoid or schizophrenic way, but more in just in terms of how can I do this better? And that's really what we're looking for is those new ways of living, those better ways of living. I honestly have to say that they used to say that what midlife was like, what, in your late 30s and 40s? Well, I'm supposed to outlive my great-grandmother on my mother's side who lived to be over 100. So I'm just now into my midlife, you know.
Oh, I'm with you there. Yeah. I think, you know, 50 is the new 30, so.
Well, my mother just turned 80, and I told her it was the new 60, and she just laughed, and she says, no, not really. I said, okay. But it's quite extraordinary. When we are trying to make it work for ourselves, there were several rules. As I said before, there are several in here that you could actually have kind of codified down into one, but again, each one of the 14 have a little different explanation, but the rules that kind of codify down are sort of like survival rule number one. I'm just curious, were these put in any particular order of importance?
They were probably in the order in which I discovered them, so not necessarily of importance, but more touching on the journey because it relates to the book and the journey of transformation of going from basically sickness to more, you know, health and happiness.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, of course, you know the first rule of survival, take care of number one. And you reiterate that in at least three of these rules, at least three of them directly. And I think that that's so important. You even mentioned it at the beginning of the program. In terms of your circle, take care of your circle. You can't take somebody else's circle. You can only take care of yours. And I think that's extremely important. And I still, I don't know about you, Diane, but I still struggle with that when I'm driving, keeping my nose out of somebody else's circle, you know, and staying focused on, okay, what am I doing? How am I maneuvering? You know, am I letting everybody around me know what I'm going to do next, you know, kind of thing, and not concern myself with somebody else's, you know, how they're doing it. And that's a hard one because, you know, we all want to get from one place to another safely. We all want to support each other. And so I guess, when do we cross that line into someone else's circle? When is it appropriate to do that?
You can only manage your own stuff.
Okay.
And to touch on that a little bit about the whole driving, a big shift happened for me. I'm probably an ex-road rager. I'm not really a road rager anymore, but there was a time when everything was about how fast and how furious I could get down the street and get from A to B, because I usually was running about four jobs. You know, I had the acting job, and then I had this whole, like, new promotion job, and then I had the traditional job, and then the family job, running all that. And I had a big shift for me, and it's, again, this is all inside. This is all the internal shift. A lot of it happened after I went to this program called Hoffman. And I realized that this whole reach for a better thought, this whole peaceful meter on the inside, was completely in my control. So I started changing when I got in the car. It was more about, like, we'll get there when we get there. And I don't like being late because it makes me stressed out, and I know somebody's waiting for me. So especially in the Midwest, we're very manufacturing-oriented, and we're on time, you know. But sometimes I knew I was going to be late. And it was always we're going to get there when we get there. This is exactly as it's planned to be. And the minute I kind of, and here's another little trick. I like to listen to books and, you know, books on tape in the car.
Oh, I love it.
Makes getting in the car more fun.
Yes.
And you know what? You're not worried what anybody else is doing. They stopped too fast. They are not driving fast enough. I'm more interested in what I'm learning. And, of course, it's always about metaphysical books. Mm-hmm. You know, so I have like a million metaphysical tapes because it makes getting in the car more fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I started making all these little shifts in my own mind, and I didn't want my kids to see a road rager because I don't want them driving at 16 around trying to, like, cut people off. So I was like, you know, there's still a lot of modeling I've got going on here. And also when I do things that are unpleasant, like I don't really like to get on the treadmill, but in order to stay fit, and I'm trying to get really healthy because I had all kinds of physical issues too, I put on, you know, that one reality TV show that I just can't, like, I like reality TV, so I get on there and I put that on. It makes the treadmill more fun.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I go down, it's not to get on the treadmill, it's to watch my show.
Mm-hmm.
And I just keep making those little shifts. So a lot of that's all from, you know, all of that is from the inner peace perspective, and it goes right kind of back to what we were talking about, that little moment of inner happiness. So instead of doing some unpleasant task, I get to run down and watch my TV show. I get to listen to my books on tape. I get all those things are just so they're fulfilling to me. They're fun. So it makes it very different. So I guess I don't. That's how I became an anti-road rager.
Well, this morning when I got up and I took care of the areas that I needed to for all of our animals, I took my wife's dog, Angus. He's a big black King Shepherd. And I grabbed the leash and I clipped him in and we went out the front door. And my wife is going, "Where's Angus?" "Oh, I've got him," as I'm yelling as I'm walking down the street. And I just felt like, okay, I could have gone by myself. But I knew that he would enjoy it. The other two dogs were in the backyard, and there's a whole separation issue that we're dealing with. But I just needed to get out of the house for just a couple of minutes. And I thought, well, what a better thing to do. And he was so good. He doesn't pull. He listens to the commands, which was part of it. And I just really felt like I was really in my element, primarily because with this whole separation issue that we're dealing with, I keep telling myself, I'm not a dog trainer. I'm not a dog trainer. And yet there I am with this dog walking him and just having a great, you know, just, and it wasn't a very long walk. It wasn't more than 15 minutes, 20 minutes maybe. But it was just nice to walk in the cool air up where we live above Santa Barbara. It was beautiful. It was probably in the low 50s. It was just fantastic. And just to have again, I think that was one of those moments of happiness that I found.
Yes. And Caesar would be very happy with you, by the way, the dog whisperer. He said that if you can get a dog, this is a total tidbit, if you can get a dog to walk without pulling, mm-hmm. know that you're in charge and you're the master, and you can repeat that, you know, just continue on and on, you will have the most perfect dog in the world because that's all they want.
Now all I have
for
to
some
do,
reason.
Yeah, now all I have to do him get him to accept our other shepherd, Bridget. That's the separation issue that we have.
I don't know about that part, sorry. I know a lot about training animals, but not quite so much.
And I would love to have him on this program. Now, yeah, we'd probably talk an awful lot about dogs, but I've watched a lot of his programs. And from my perspective, he is dealing with a lot of spiritual and or energetic issues here. I mean, you know, when you watch those programs, and that's what we're talking about here is shifting one's energy. You know, you've already talked about that in terms of finding those moments of happiness in the car listening to the books, or finding that moment of happiness on your treadmill watching the reality shows. Again, those shifts, it's not just of perception. It's not just a shift in lifestyle. It's a shift in energy. And then that, in turn, it's interesting. It makes a falsehood of the old saying, you can't change other people, because you can. You have to change yourself first. But as you're doing that, you're affecting the people around you, like your kids. You're affecting them, or like with me with the dog, I'm affecting this animal. So in a manner of speaking, it's indirect, granted, we can change other people. We just can't do it directly. We can't do it consciously
and when you speak to them from that heart space, when you get there, let's say you take your beautiful walk, and I have the same experience where it's so peaceful with mm-hmm. the animal, and get out for 10 minutes, come back, my heart space is open, I'm out of my head, and everyone responds differently to me.
Yeah.
Not only am I running this family, but, you know, I'm in the place where I can listen. Yeah. I'm in the place where I can see and I can look at you, and I'm not trying to run back onto my computer or get back to an email. So just those 10 minutes of that love it inventory, you know, those little things that you're going to do throughout the week, it shifts everything.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, I need to do two things here. Number one, I need to let people know how they can get in touch with you. You have a website called liveyoureverything.com. That's liveyoureverything.com. You can also find out more there about The Real Brass Ring. That is the title of the book. Change Your Life Course Now, Diane Bischoff James is my guest. And the second thing that I need to do is I need to ask you three final questions. And the first one is, who is Diane Bischoff James?
I am a midlife reinventionist. And I hope part of my goal is to help others find and achieve their greatest good. So from a purpose-driven perspective, nothing makes me happier than to watch other people light up on the inside and watch the light come back in their eyes.
And you've sort of answered my second question, which is, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
To help others, to inspire and motivate others to do what they came here to do.
And you've been reading my script, because my third question is, who inspires you?
Oh, I'm an integrator, so I am inspired by every single teacher and healer out there. There's so many. It's such a long list. Sonia is one of my guides, and I will always thank her for waking me up and shaking me up and continuing to do the work that she does. She's one of my top guides in this world. So anyone that offers 1 ounce of help to another person, I honor, respect, and I put in my guide category.
Mm. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I also understand that you're going to be at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles in February 2015, and if you should happen to lose your way and find it up here into the Santa Barbara area, let me know. We'll have you in studio to continue this conversation.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it. Thank you so much.
So if you ever find yourself here, whether it's around the Conscious Life Expo time or not, please let us know, and we'll do that. Diane Bischoff-James, thank you so much for joining us, author of The Real Brass Ring. It's been a delight this last hour.
Thank you so much. I've had a fabulous time.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.